This is a Triple J podcast.
There are some things in life that we really do take for granted. We never think too much about them, why we're doing these things, what purpose they serve, where they came from. It's time to learn a little more about one of them. I'm Dave Marchese. This is Hack's Deep Dive for the Week, a journey to discover the potential origins of something we do all the time, kissing. And it's not just humans kissing, other animals do it too. It really is a bit strange when you think about it, isn't it? Where and why did that start? Well, you're about to hear from someone who's dedicated a lot of time to trying to figure that out. An evolutionary biologist from the University of Oxford, Dr. Matilda Brindle.
Why did it evolve? Why would animals do this? It's quite risky, right? You're literally swapping saliva. Why on earth would we do it?
Yeah, Dr. Matilda's spent a lot of time looking at the history of kissing in our early ancestors, but not just kissing. She's got into a lot of other weird and interesting habits.
It takes a little while to get your head round. Why would you go and have a wank after you've had sex, essentially?
And she really is trying to figure out what freaky stuff our ancestors were getting up to with others walking the earth at the same time.
It does put a bit more of a romantic spin on human-Neanderthal relationship.
Yeah, you're going to learn something from this chat. We get into heaps in this one. Here's my chat with Dr. Matilda Brindle. Dr. Matilda, thank you so much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you for having me.
I need to know, when was it that you decided, I've got to get to the bottom of kissing?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think we were just fascinated by it because we realised that this is something that lots of humans do every single day. It's got massive cultural significance in many societies. And yet we don't really understand why it exists. Why did it evolve? Why would animals do this? It's quite risky, right? You're literally swapping saliva. We know we can get ill from that. You know, you can get cold sores and things like that. So why on earth would we do it? And so my research background is often in these in sexual behaviours that you might not necessarily think would kind of be useful for passing on your genetic material and things like that. And so we kind of just started thinking about kissing and wanted to explore it more.
So just to be clear, there is no evolutionary advantage to kissing. It serves no real purpose in that regard.
Well, actually, there are a few hypotheses we think it might do. We really wanted to be able to test this and we just couldn't find enough data on it. So we're kind of out here begging other scientists to start collecting more data. You know, if you work with a baboon and you see it kissing, please, please write it down. But there are a few hypotheses for why kissing could have evolved, and they differ dependent on whether you're talking about a sexual kiss or a platonic kiss. So in terms of platonic kissing, we think things like mother-offspring kisses and things like that are really useful for bonding. It could be like to reconcile. So chimpanzees, after they've had a fight, will go and kiss each other, which is quite a sweet way to make up. They're literally kissing and making up. But also it's just a token of affection, which is really useful. Sexual kissing is obviously a different thing. And there are different hypotheses with that. So it could be to do with kind of mate assessment. I think we've all been there where you've kissed someone and you've been like, oh, actually, this isn't going to work. This isn't a good vibe for me. And that's what other animals might be doing. They're mating and kind of raising an offspring with another individual is quite a heavy investment. And so if they can kind of kiss and assess that mate beforehand, if they've got bad breath, literally, if they smell bad, they might be a bit ill. Do you know what? Actually, I would rather not shag you. And then the other idea is that it might be basically foreplay. So it's pre-arousing individuals before copulation, which can actually be really helpful in terms of increasing the chance that a female is fertilized. So we know, for example, in humans, the pH of the vagina actually changes over the course of being sexually aroused. Normally it's a little bit acidic, basically to keep any nasties out, but that is not great for sperm cells either, if it's acidic. So it changes, it becomes a lot lot more neutral. And so things like this, by basically being aroused before sex, can be useful for increasing fertilization, and kissing might be a way of kind of increasing arousal.
Yeah, here's me saying, it serves no purpose at all. And then you list off a full list of reasons why it could be important. Yeah. I mean, this is fascinating. And I do want to get into the definition of a kiss as well, because I imagine that is something that you had to really think about. Before we get to that, though, apart from humans, do we know which other animals do kiss?
Yes. So it occurs in lots of the large apes, which is humans, chimpanzees, bonobos, gorillas, and orangutans. That's kind of our closest living relatives amongst the primates. And most of them seem to kiss. In the small apes, which are things like gibbons and siamangs, we don't seem to have any evidence of kissing. And then it kind of, the data get a little bit patchier in the monkeys. So we know that some baboons and macaque monkeys kiss, and they're actually quite closely related to each other, which is interesting. And then if you go outside of the primates, then we found that things like polar bears seem to kiss, prairie dogs, wolves, even albatrosses look like they might kiss. So we didn't specifically look at that in this study because there's loads of animals and it would have taken forever. But we did find a few really nice examples.
And do we all kiss the same? What is the definition of a kiss?
Bear with me, because it's really, really not a sexy definition. So a non-agonistic interaction, which just means that it's not aggressive, basically, involving directed intraspecific, that just means it's within the same species, oral contact with some movement of the lips or mouth parts and no food transfer. So, I mean, really not very romantic at all. But the reason we have this big clunky definition is because we needed it to be wide enough to include animals that might not have the same face structure as humans, for example. Humans have quite a flat face. Something like an albatross obviously has a beak, so it doesn't have lips even. So that's why we said oral contact of the lips or mouth parts. So that includes even things like ants as well. So we had to be kind of broad enough that it's including lots of different animals, but also narrow enough that it's excluding behaviours that look like kissing but aren't. So a really nice example of this is pre-mastication, which is basically, it happens across the primate order. Loads of humans do it. A mother, for example, will pre-chew food for her offspring because they just don't have the musculature to do it themselves safely. And then she might feed that to them mouth to mouth. And that looks exactly like kissing if you're not seeing what's going on inside the mouth. That's why we've said this excludes food transfer.
You can't realize how relieved I am that there's no food exchange in the definition. That's a really big relief. Do we know when we kissed for the first time? I guess this is the whole point of the research. What did you find out?
Yeah, so what we found is that kissing seems to have evolved in the ancestor of all of the large apes, and they lived around 21.5 to 21.9 million years ago. So this is, you know, quite a way back, and it seems to have evolved in this ancestor, and it's been retained. So it stayed put across the course of evolution, right the way up to the apes that are alive today. So those large apes that I mentioned earlier, with the exception of one species of gorilla. If we have more data, it's very possible that this date could actually be pushed even further back. But we basically don't have enough data outside of the apes to test this. So we're thinking of it as it evolved at least 21.5 million years ago. But, you know, potentially it could be even before that. And of course, we only looked at the primates. So we know that other animals outside of the primates kiss. So, you know, when did kissing in polar bears evolve? Was that ancestral? Do other bears kiss? So there's loads to be done in this area. It's really, really exciting. And then the other interesting thing that we found that we're quite excited about is that, like, we reconstructed the ancestral states of kissing. So going back in time in our ancestors, we also wanted to look at whether Neanderthals kiss. Now, Neanderthals are a close relative of humans, but they aren't an ancestor. We didn't evolve from Neanderthals. So they're more of a sort of, I guess you can think of them as a tip on the tree of life rather than kind of where two branches separate. What we found is that Neanderthals probably kiss too. Now, that's really exciting for a few reasons. There's some evidence from other people's amazing research that Neanderthals and humans shared this oral microbe for a few 100,000 years at least after we split. So humans and Neanderthals share a common ancestor. And after we split as species, we were sharing this oral microbe. And that means we were swapping saliva somehow. Now, that could be through kissing, but it also could be through things like sharing meat. So if, you know, if there was a kind of a communal kill or something like that, and they didn't have the best oral hygiene, they could have been passing meat between each other. However, what we also know is that most humans of non-African descent have at least a small amount of Neanderthal ancestry, which is really interesting because that means that at some point humans and Neanderthals were also interbreeding after we split into separate species. So we know they were interbreeding. We know that they were swapping saliva. And what we've shown is that, like humans, Neanderthals also kissed. And if you put those three bits of evidence together, we sort of think that it's quite likely that humans and Neanderthals were actually kissing each other. Of course, we haven't tested this. We haven't proved anything. We need to keep chipping away, keep testing this hypothesis. But it does put a bit more of a romantic spin on human-Neanderthal relationships.
It's absolutely not how I had imagined everything playing out, that we're macking on with Neanderthals, everyone's having a great time. But it sounds, yeah, a lot sexier than I had imagined previously.
Yeah.
So we're thinking more at least 21.5 million years ago, and you've done that by looking at common ancestors. It's fascinating to look at this and to be able to trace it back so far. And I can tell that you're really interested and excited by this research. You do look at other sexual and social traits, and you've previously looked at the origins of masturbation. Did that originate before kissing?
Yes. Yeah. So my previous work was looking at the evolution of masturbation. I've also looked at things like the evolution of the penis bone and all sorts of kind of fun, sexy things. But masturbation does seem to have evolved before kissing, actually. So that's a really interesting one. I'm really interested in the primates. I think they're a fascinating group of animals. So I tend to focus on them, partly because I like them, but partly because they seem to just really enjoy doing all of these like fun, sexy things that I like to study. So masturbation, yes, is much older. And actually, we were able with masturbation to test why it could have evolved. So as well as when, what the evolutionary drivers might be. Unfortunately, only found results for male primates because data for female was lacking. But basically, we found that it could be to do with if males are masturbating before sex and they're not ejaculating, then basically they might be edging themselves, so that if a female comes along that they can mate with, then they have a kind of speed is on their side, let's say, so they can ejaculate really quickly before a bigger male comes, potentially beats them up, pushes them off the female, it all goes wrong. So they're sort of doing that, and it being aroused also can increase, can kind of prepare sperm to act quickly as well. So that's one idea for why masturbation might be useful in males. The other idea is that actually sometimes they ejaculate before they have sex and then go and have sex, which seems just like a really stupid thing to do, frankly. But actually sperm, the longer they're sat in the testes, they can deteriorate in quality. So some of the sperm cells die, or they can become deformed or slow down. And actually, by ejaculating before they have sex and then having this store of fresh sperm ready to have sex, they're kind of putting their best men forward to be the ones that can potentially fertilize this female. So they're replenishing their stocks. And then the other idea is that they could be masturbating after sex to basically cleanse their reproductive tract after they've had sex. So this one, again, it takes a little while to get your head round. Why would you go and have a wank after you've had sex, essentially? But what they're doing is flushing out potential pathogens from the reproductive tract. Like they say that humans should pee after sex, the primates and other animals might be masturbating instead. Ejaculate is mildly bactericidal, so it could kind of help cleanse the reproductive tract. And it's also a lot easier to re-ingest after than urine. So, you know, if they need to be making sure they're retaining as much moisture as possible, they can eat it. And actually, they do. I've seen them do it a lot, and it's really gross, to me, at least. I would really love to look into females. I suspect that, well, we did look into females, but there just weren't enough data to kind of test our hypotheses in the rigorous way we would like to.
Dr. Matilda, what got you into evolutionary biology? Because I do feel like there's so much focus on looking forward all the time in the world. Why did you think, I want to look back, I want to understand where we came from?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I don't have a very sciencey answer to that. I would love to say that, you know, I've always been interested in fossils and things like that. I really wasn't. I did my master's in human evolution and behaviour, quickly realised I'm not particularly interested in humans. I'm interested in other primates. And I guess I was just fascinated by the fact that you can kind of have this time machine. The methods that I use, I hated them when I first learned about them. I didn't understand them. I thought they were sort of weird witchcraft and that they just couldn't possibly work. I went to do field work looking at capuchin monkeys in Costa Rica, and then something bit me and I got really, really sick in the jungle and had to fly back. And I thought, my master's is ruined. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I'd done an essay on the penis bone for one of my courses. And in the essay, I said, oh, well, no one really knows how this evolves. It would be cool if someone worked it out. The leader of the course said, well, you did really well in that essay. Why don't you try and look at the penis bone? And I was like, oh, I hate it. I hate those methods. I don't want to. But ended up doing it and just completely falling in love with the fact that you can track backwards through time. Like you can, you know, you can try and think about the future, and we make these predictions for what's going to happen based on probabilities in our lives every day about the future. Should I cross the road? Oh, look, there's a car over there. I probably shouldn't. You're making these predictions all the time. But actually, the methods I use are essentially doing that back through time. We can basically reconstruct evolution without even looking at fossils. And that's how I fell in love with it. So very much not a slick origin story, I would guess.
I think it's fascinating, though. I mean, it sounds like you believe there is a lot we can learn from the past, and I'm sure there is. Like, we've learned so much already just during this chat. Do you think people are going to be looking back on us one day and researching our habits?
I would imagine so. I mean, I think humans are leaving a lot of clues that aren't going to degrade in the environment. So, I mean, maybe
it's easy when it's all on a hard drive. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, look, thank you so much for having a chat with us and breaking down what is really, really interesting research. Evolutionary biologist Dr. Matilda Brindle from the University of Oxford. Appreciate your time.
Thanks. It's been great to chat.
Summer hack.
Loved that discussion. Obviously, Dr. Matilda has so much expertise there and has really invested a lot of time into this research. But she says, I don't have all the answers. We do need more research. We need other evolutionary biologists looking at these things as well. And there is debate among experts about why we started kissing. Not everyone agrees on the exact evolutionary reasons, but it's good to at least have a think about it, don't you reckon? Remember, if you liked that chat, subscribe to this podcast. We've got stuff dropping all over summer. And of course, Hack socials as well. Triple J Hack on Instagram and TikTok. That is all for the Deep Dive and the Summer Hack Pod for now. I'll catch you next time.